Today's episode is proud to recognize the Alabama Nurses Foundation. Their mission? Supporting nursing scholarships and improving Alabama's nursing school facilities. You can help by choosing the Nurses Save Lives Distinctive Alabama Automobile Tag. Your purchase funds scholarships for future nurses and upgrades to teaching facilities statewide. Learn more and make a difference at www.alabamanursesfoundation.org. Together, let's invest in the nurses who save lives every day.
Welcome to Surthrival, the podcast about befriending grief. I'm your host, Stacia Gaines, and with me in the studio today is T. Marie King and Nell Branham. T. Marie is actually responsible for this series, or partly so. She and I had lunch one day, and I told her about starting the podcast Surthrival, and she told me a little of her story and said, you really should do a series on caregivers. And as I've said in previous episodes, that's not so much my story, but because people kept saying it was such a need, due to T. Marie and others mentioning it, that's why we're here today. So, T. Marie, thank you for that idea. My goal is always to educate and support and inspire listeners who are going through grief in different situations. And as I said, this is not my primary story. And so I am so thankful to have Nell and T. Marie in the room. So I'm going to start out by asking them to introduce themselves. So, Nell, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me. Stacia and I go to church together, so we have shared some of these things before. I'm Nell Branham, and I live in Alabama in the Birmingham area. I have been a children's librarian, elementary school librarian, and also an editor in previous life. And now I'm retired, and I have been in a new chapter of writing children's books, no pun intended, I guess, but writing children's fiction. So that's what I have been spending my time lately doing. I also have 9 grandchildren that keep me busy as well.
Yes. All right. Talk a little bit about your grief journey and kind of your caregiving and what you experience now.
Yeah. At one time, my husband and I had 3 parents that were in their 90s, and so there was some caregiving going on there. One of them was out of state and had no children. None of his children lived close to him. That was my husband's father. So there was a lot of on-the-road travel for that. Mm-hmm. But when my dad passed away, I became the caregiver for my mother, who was 92 at the time, 91. And she was pretty independent, lived at home. That meant all the things you would expect with doctor visits and keeping the meds straight and all of that, but it also meant helping her with her presentations. She did presentations as Rosie the Riveter. She and my dad had done that together. And when he passed away, I decided that if she wanted to keep doing it, I would do it with her. So I was 1 year away from retirement, but I left my job. And we did that for about 5 years until COVID hit. Right at that same time, my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 esophageal cancer. And so for a while, it was caregiving for both of them.
Wow.
And she passed away at the age of 99 in 2021. And then my husband passed away 8 months later in 2022.
Wow. Okay. T. Marie.
Yeah, well, I am T. Marie King. I do probably entirely too many things. But my 9-to-5 is at Jones Valley Teaching Farm. I oversee the workforce development arm or the work with high school students. So we hire high school students and college students to come and learn how to farm. I'm also a filmmaker and now have ventured into the world of playwriting. And actually kind of processing grief kind of got me into playwriting because my sister and I, we didn't grow up with our father. So we had a very complicated, is probably the nicest way to say, mm-hmm. relationship with him. You know, parents divorce and, you know, for whatever reason, he decided, you know, other things were more important to him. than trying to, take care of his kids, whatever. And, so we easily went maybe 20 some years not really having a relationship with him. And my sister and I are 10 years apart. So that played out for each one of us totally different. We always say we were raised only children. Mm-hmm. Because when I was 17, she was 7. Wow. So we were in two totally different phases, experiencing things differently, needing different things. But fast forward, he got sick in 22 and literally went into the hospital the week of her wedding. And oh my goodness. And we weren't, foreign to these phone calls randomly saying that either he was sick or in the hospital or something happened. And, we would, rock, paper, scissor and say, okay, it's your turn to go check and see what's happening and report back. Mm. And so it was her turn and I went grocery shopping. And so she goes and she calls me and she was like, this looks kind of bad. You need to come up here. So I get to the VA and we didn't know how bad it was at the time, but they were like, we're not really sure what's going on. I think at the time they wanted to amputate his legs. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not making that decision. He's going to have to make that decision. And once we realized how bad it was, literally within a few days, she and I just kind of decided, we're just going to have to be in this for the long haul because who else does he have to help him? I said, but right now we're going to put that on pause. We're going to go get you married and we're going to celebrate and we're going to have a good time and we'll pick this back up on Sunday. And that's what we did. And for the next 7 months, she and I tag team taking care of him. And it was a tough, 6-7 months because my sister's a flight attendant. Mm-hmm. So she's flying all the time. I was working at Jones Valley, but I was also filming a documentary at the time. So our lives was just extremely chaotic. And he didn't deserve for us to take care of him. But we knew it was the right thing to do, and to me, that was more important than trying to prove a point. And I think sometimes when we deal with an absent parent and it's like, oh, now you need me. Where were you when I needed you? Mm-hmm. How we were raised is, you're not going to hold that over somebody. If you could be there for somebody, you do it. That didn't mean it was necessarily easy, but we thought it was right. And I even had friends who were like, at his memorial service we had for him was like, how y'all did his service, we would have had no idea that he wasn't there for y'all growing up. So for us it was, we're going to just tough it out and we'll figure it out as we go along. So that's what brings me to the conversation.
Wow. Very different story from the four people that we've talked, or five people we've talked to thus far. And that's really why I wanted you to be here, T. Marie, because there are those situations. There's the, oh, this is my mother. She was wonderful. And so, of course, I want to care for her. And that's still hard, but how much more complicated and difficult it must have been when he didn't care for you as you would expect a father to.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And choosing, we had a choice.
Yeah.
Because, actually the state will do what the state will do, but it wasn't the right thing to do. And sometimes the right thing to do is hard thing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I'm going to go back to you. What was the most difficult part of being a caregiver? And it may be different with your mom and your father-in-law than it was with your husband.
Yeah, I think it was two different experiences, really. But I think just the daily schedule changing like it did, because all of a sudden, you may have experienced this too, T. Marie, that the things that are on your to-do list are different than what they used to be. And the things that are on your calendar are different from what they used to be. And they involve a whole bunch of things you'd rather not do, treatments and trips and insurance and all kinds of things that you'd rather not have to deal with. But this is where you are, and this is what you do. And the Lord gives you strength, and you just keep going. So I think that was probably the most difficult. But I learned to call on people for help. I loved what you said about you and your sister, because my brother, I have one brother, he lives in Virginia. And it wasn't easy for him to be here all the time as we were living in the same city, even though we lived on opposite sides of Birmingham, north and south. It was much closer than Virginia. And but he was available to come. I remember when Mother fell at the end, and that gave her some issues that she just couldn't overcome. But we needed to make some decisions about surgery, and my brother had just been here and had been helping us make a lot of decisions for a couple of weeks. He had just gotten home when this happened, and I called him. And for a while, we tried to do the on the phone with the doctor in the emergency room on speakerphone, you know, kind of thing. And I said, I really need help, because my husband was due for an appointment in Houston coming up, and I have always said he and his wife, Wayne, and his wife, Regina, picked up the purse and got in the car and came, you know, and that was very, very helpful. So if I had not called on him, then I would have had, you know, missed that opportunity to, number one, go through this with him, but also not have to do it all by myself, you know,
right.
and give my mom the opportunity to be with him too. And other times I learned to call on caregivers as well and not have to do everything myself.
Yeah.
It's kind of a self-preservation thing sometimes.
Yeah. T. Marie, did you have help outside of your sister?
We were, I hate to say lucky, I hate to use that word, but he was pretty much in the hospital the entire time.
Okay.
He was sick. I think he was out maybe a week and ended up having a stroke and having to go back in. But even with somebody being in the hospital, and he had so many internal issues that we didn't know that kind of got discovered along the way. He had a lot of GI issues, these constant bleeds. I think he may have had 16 surgeries or so.
Mm.
And then we found out he had something in his brain. Like, it felt like it was just thing after thing. So a lot of times it was calls in the middle of the day, decision needs to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And it's like, I need to call my sister, but my sister's on a trip. How much time do I have to make this decision? Because we didn't want to make decisions, you know, apart from each other. We pretty much knew what the other would want to do, but you want to talk it out because right. you're dealing with somebody else's life
right.
in your hands, correct? So, but what I did learn to do was to allow other people to help me,
yeah,
which was very difficult in the beginning,
yeah.
for friends to be like, girl, do you need me to bring you lunch? Or do you need dinner? You know, what do you and your sister need? And at first it was like, oh, we're good and everything. And I think about 2 months in, I was like, yeah, go on DoorDash me some.
And here's what I would like.
This is what I would like personally, you know. And I just got rid of all the, like, you know, because we try to be nice and, like, get the cheaper thing. And I was like, no, I want tzatzikis and I want this. Or, no, I want Eugene's hot chicken and, like, send that to me. But to have people say, I know I can't help any other way. This is what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was appreciative to have people opening up. And then we also had my sister's now new husband who popped in when he could. And, you know, he was so sweet, trying not to overstep because he knew this was such a big thing. But I think the biggest thing for us was, like, allowing other people to just help us. Not necessarily we need you to step in with our dad. But to care for us.
Feed me.
To feed us. And, yeah. and again, I was working on a film, so they know me, like, okay, you're probably up to 2 a.m. doing something when, hey, did you stop and eat? Or did you go mm-hmm. do this? Hey, go walk around the block, you know? And then my job was amazing in making sure that, you know, you don't have to be here. Like, you can go and handle your family business if you need to and just, you know, let us know what you need. But my nature is not to do that. It's to keep going. But I learned real quick to allow people to help.
Yeah.
I think God brings people in your lives,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be support. And, you know, sometimes it's like, well, God, I need your help. And he like, but I sent you like 4 friends that could be helping you, but you're just not activating them.
Yeah.
So I think learning how to activate the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not everybody. I do think you have to pray for discernment.
Right.
And know who to ask. But I think if people are reaching out, knowing you're in need, that's God helping you out, saying, yo, I'm
mm-hmm.
tapping somebody on their shoulder and saying, call them and see how they are. And so I think sometimes it's our pride that gets in the way and we don't want to act. So my encouragement to caregivers, like the folks who reach out to help, allow them to help.
Yeah. And so many times people don't know what to do. So if they're offering That means that they really care, right. And you may have to articulate, I'm really craving barbecue, or yeah. I don't need food right now, but I do need a Diet Coke. You know, whatever it is, but just to know what you need and put aside the pride, and if they're reaching out, they want to help.
Absolutely.
How about you, Nell?
Yeah, another thing I did, too, was I began to do some email updates. I couldn't do them as often as I wanted, but every 2, 3, 4 months, I would try to give an update to... And my email list kind of grew as time went on. Mm-hmm. You know, would you like to for me to add you to my list? And that did a couple of things. One is it let me express what was going on. It let me, being a writer, I guess that helped me to kind of boil it down to give the basics of what was happening at the moment, how we were, how we felt about it. And that kept me connected to a lot of people, that even if they didn't live near me, they would send an email back, and I knew people were praying for us and were helping us. And another person that really helped me a lot was Jim himself.
That's your husband.
That's my husband, yeah. One of the questions people say is, should we tell them what's going on? Should we tell the person who's sick what's going on? And we opted from the beginning to do that, and it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. I remember... Oh, at first we thought it was stage 3, and then they found a spot, wanted to biopsy it, and so it was right before COVID, and so you could still go back into the little room and talk to the doctor, you know, when the surgery was over. And I asked him, he said he felt like it was malignant, which meant it had spread, and so I asked him what we were looking at here, and I probably shouldn't have done that, but I'm kind of glad I did, because he was kind of a gruff fellow, but he was trying to be upbeat, and he said, well, you know, if he does real well with this chemo, probably a good year, 18 months, you know, and that was not what I expected to hear at all. So I was pretty devastated, and it took me a couple of days. Jim knew it was malignant, but it took me a couple of days to tell him what the doctor had said. But I was really glad I did. It took me a couple of days and a bucket of tears at the moment to get it out. But I was really glad I did, because, for one thing, it's his life. It's his body. He deserves to know what's going on in right. his own body. Also, it kept me from having to bear it by myself, which he would not have wanted me to do. But the main thing is, we could make decisions together, mm-hmm. and we could decide what's going to happen next together, instead of me having to make all the decisions based on what I knew but wouldn't tell him. So mm-hmm. he was one of the biggest helpers.
Wow.
Throughout.
Along with that, Nell, did you cry in front of Jim? Did you grieve alongside him, or did you try to put on a happy face and then go into the bathroom and cry?
Both. Okay. There were times when I felt like, you know, let's just be strong here together. And then there were times when I couldn't hold that back from him. But he was such a strong man of faith. He was a minister, and such strength that came from him. I think as time was coming to an end in the last few months, as we felt like it probably was, we began to talk more honestly and openly about things. Thanksgiving, he passed away in January, but Thanksgiving we made a trip to see his two sisters and also our son in Nebraska, and you know, we just were able to talk open and honestly about things. And when you do that, it's hard not to cry. Yeah. You know, it's hard not to let the tears come, because you know probably what's going to be. But at the same time, you want to make the use of every moment, and you don't want to spend it all in tears. Mm-hmm. You want to do fun things, and you want to take advantage of that last domino game, or maybe it's not the last domino game, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to really not squander your time
right.
with that. So,
I was introduced to a term by another guest, which I was unfamiliar with, but it makes so much sense: anticipatory grief. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know, is this the last domino mm-hmm. game, or the last time we have pizza together, mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's maybe more true in caregiver grief than in other types of grief. Mm-hmm. T. Marie, I'm curious, were like, I know the relationship with your dad was not great. Did you experience grief?
Not during, because we didn't really know what was going on. Like, we knew we had a lot of health stuff happening, and they were trying to treat. I think we saw it coming maybe 4 months in. He kind of went into ICU, and that's kind of where he stayed. But we didn't know how close, you know, we didn't know if, you know, we got another year with him, another 2 years. You never know, you know, bodies are, you know, God's creation. They do whatever they're going to do. And so my sister was actually planning to figure out, like, okay, maybe I'll just move dad in with us. And mm-hmm. that way we can figure out, you know, caregiving. You know, we was trying to see what, you know, his military benefits provided. We're doing all that research. And I was like, okay, well, I can help on this end and all of these things. And literally, like, out of nowhere, one night I got a call at like 3 a.m. in the morning. And the doctor was like, you know, Miss King, can you and your sister come to the hospital now? And I was like, now? And that's never a good, you know, call.
Yeah.
And so I call her and she wakes up. We go down to the hospital and, you know, he's up, he's alert. And the doctor was like, look, there's not much else we can do. You know, the heart surgeon has already refused a heart surgery. He's not going to do that. This other doctor, he's not going to do this particular surgery. He'll die on the operating table. So we're thinking hospice. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time we were like confronted with, okay, this is the end. And we were just like, okay. And we were like, well, what do you want to do? And he was like, well, y'all decide. And I was like, no, you're not putting that burden on us. Mm-hmm. You decide. We will support whatever it is that you want to do. You know, if you want to fight, if you want to do another surgery or whatever, you want to get a new doctors, like we will follow you on that. If you want to do hospice, we got you on that. But you have to make that decision. And he took about, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes and finally was like, you know, let's just do hospice. We were like, okay, let's do hospice. You know, now it's like 4 a.m., 4:30 a.m. And the doctor was like, okay, we can get him in palliative care. We can get him set up here. It'll be a better room, all these things. And what we'll do is, you know, we'll just move him this afternoon. Y'all go home, get rest. I was still working on this film that I was producing. And we go home, rest a little bit. I go do some things with the film that morning. We meet back at the hospital at like 10, talking to the doctor. We're going to do this. We're going to move you here. Me and my sister's like, okay, well, you call so-and-so and so-and-so, all these folks. And all right, you call mom and da-da-da-da. And it's like, well, we'll give you a minute. They walk out. They weren't even out the room 5 minutes. And the nurse comes in. She was like, y'all should come now. He's passing. And we were uh-huh. just like, mm-hmm. what changed? Mm-hmm. And I think what happened was he accepted mm-hmm. in his mind and was like, okay. So by the time we make it to the room, he's already kind of in a sleep state. And in 40 minutes, he was gone.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, and for us, I think our grief was probably delayed. Mm-hmm. Because we weren't expecting that. We thought we had like 72 hours or a week or so to like, okay, let's get his family in, da da da. But it's like, boom, done. And it's just like, okay, now what do we do now? And it's like, do we have to pick a funeral? Like, we weren't prepared for any of that. Mm-hmm. So for us and for me, it was just like fix it mode. Okay, we need funeral home. We need this. When is this going to be? Okay, we got to find out. Do we need to have this at a church? Do we need to, you know, so it's all these things. Next week was just planning, putting things together. Right. And I think fast forward maybe 8 months, it just hit me. I was like, I should probably talk to somebody. I don't think I processed this yet. And it wasn't like I'm teary-eyed type of thing. It was just I need to
process
mm-hmm. and deal with the loss, all the work that went into him not being there and we being there for him. Like, I mean, we would sit, I think my sister and him probably talked more than he and I did. Like, I would go mm-hmm. sit up at the hospital for a couple of hours. We would never speak. We would like watch
TV. Okay.
And then I'd be like, you need anything? He'd be like, nah, I'm good. Or bring me some honey buns tomorrow. And it's like, all right, cool. See you tomorrow. And that was it. But that was he and I's relationship. Mm-hmm. But what I did through starting to process my grief was writing. Mm-hmm. And that turned into a play that really addressed all the things from childhood up into him passing, that it was like all of that weight lifted off of me. Yeah. And for me, it wasn't, I need to sit down with somebody, or that wasn't what I needed. Now, my sister was like, no, I think I actually need to go sit and talk to somebody. You know, we just processed it differently.
You know, one of the basic principles of Sir Thrival, well, two of them. One is feel the feels, like don't suppress it, whatever it is. Feelings are neutral. But the second part is what you described in writing the play, is express the feels.
Yeah.
And as writers, now you kind of said that was one of the ways that you did that, but expressing your feelings is really important. You can feel them, but if you don't do something with them, they will squish out in all kinds of ugly ways.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, I learned to kind of adopt a mantra, I think, which was no regrets. If I can get to the end of each day, it's a lot of uncharted territory. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I got to go to a new parking deck I've never been to before. I got to figure out how to operate this facility. I've got to learn how to talk to this company or this whatever. We've got to learn how to navigate all these things. And if I could get to the end of each day and feel like I had done the best I could that day, then it'll all add up to no regrets. And that's the best you can do. And the Lord gives you strength to do that and gives you wisdom when you need it. Stacia, you and I have talked before about my Ebenezer stones.
Yeah, that I love those.
I just made, for some reason, I don't know how it got started, but I had some little rocks that I got at Hobby Lobby. They weren't actual rocks. They were like little glass rock-looking things. And at some paint pens. And, you know, in Samuel put up a stone and called it Ebenezer after a victory in a battle. And he called it Ebenezer, saying, thus far the Lord has helped us. So that's what Ebenezer stones do. They help you remember, thus far the Lord has helped us. Because you forget. You're so busy with things happening. You forget just how that person showed up when you needed them, or how we felt like we needed to change doctors at one point, but we didn't know who to go to. So we started sort of asking around, and the same name kept coming up. And so that's who we went to, and it was a blessing. It was just, he was about 14, but we loved him. And he was fabulous. And we had our first trip to MD Anderson in Houston. We decided to fly that time, and we sat next to a lady whose husband had the same kind of cancer, and she told us all about MD Anderson and how to get around. You know, there were just things that were just put in our path that thus far the Lord has helped us. And when you remember those things, you know he hasn't left you. You know, I will never leave you or forsake you, and he doesn't. And that helped a lot, too. To remember what he's done.
Yeah, that's another principle of Sir Thrival, is living in an attitude of gratitude and focusing on those things. It does not change your circumstances. Mm-hmm. The person is still dying. You're still grieving. But if you can focus on the blessings, how God has provided for you, the good things, if you focus on those things, it just changes your perspective on your circumstances.
Somebody early on, I think it was Jim's sister, gave us a little booklet called Don't Waste Your Cancer. And I thought, she's got me at the title, you know, because if for the believer, if you're in God's hands, it's a test of whether you believe what you've always said you believe or not. Mm-hmm. Either he loves you or he doesn't. Either he has a plan for you or he doesn't. Either he wants what's best for you or he doesn't. And I believe he does. Well, if that is true, then the best thing I can do is get on board with whatever it is God is up to here. I don't have to like it. I don't have to understand it. I don't have to know why it happened this way. But I just know that one day I'll be in heaven too, and we'll all be reunited, and we will have, I'll be with the Lord. I'll be with Jim. I'll be, you know, we will have another day. But until that time, my window is limited for what I can do here. And for some reason, God is left me here, and Jim's the one that's having the ball in heaven today. I love it that he's not in pain anymore. But for some reason, that's the way God chose to do it. And I believe he has my best interest in mind, and he had Jim's best interest in mind. And that gives me a lot of comfort.
As we close out, what words of advice would you give to a listener who is caring for someone that they love right now? T. Marie, we'll start with you.
I think for me, it's especially if you're caring for somebody who the relationship may not be as strong or estranged, you know, you got to lean into your faith. You really have to. Yeah. You know, whatever that is, you know, I'm a believer. So for me, it was, you know, having to stand on the word, even in choosing, like, I'm going to do this, but Lord, you got to give me strength. So I think leaning into your faith is very important. On the flip side, you know, when it's people that you really care about, I lost my grandmother last year, and we had an amazing relationship. And I think sometimes what I saw my family do in the case of my grandmother was praying for her to live longer. And I knew she was like, I'm ready to go. You know, she lived into her, she was like 93 when she passed. She had been wanting the Lord to come get her for about 10 years anyway. Right. But, you know, she had buried her parents. Most of her siblings were gone. You know, her cousins were gone. And I understood, you know, she did what she was supposed to do on her journey. You know, some people's journeys are extremely long. Some people's journeys are shorter. And I think, again, that goes back to leaning into your faith and understanding that sometimes it's not our will. Sometimes it's their will and what they've already discussed with God that they want, and they may not have discussed that with you, and that's okay.
Thank you. Nell?
I would say stay connected. Stay connected to your family. Stay connected to your friends, to the Lord. It's easy to want to pull out and not want to be involved with people anymore. And just too busy, too much going on, can't handle it. And don't do that, because you need those connections that will hold you up when you need to be held up. So I guess that's the main thing.
Thank you. T. Marie King, Nell Branham, thank you for sharing your story with the Sir Thrival listeners. If you are a caregiver and you're struggling, have burnout, you please reach out to your friends. There are also lots of resources, and those will be on my website, sirthrivalpodcast.com. Do not suffer alone. It can be a very isolating time. And so put aside your pride and let others help you. And thank you for listening.